This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Again, I keep saying it. Don't complain about players getting paid in sports. The money's there. Xander Bogaerts, middle of the night, gets an 11-year deal, $280 million. Came late, but he's leaving Boston. They groomed him. They got him up when he was a young man. He played for them for a number of years. He was a four-time All-Star. He won two World Series with them. But now the Padres, oh, in case you've heard that team before in these kind of things, are now breaking the bank once again. They landed Juan Soto last year at the trade deadline. Remember, they signed Manny Machado to that big deal, gave Fernando Tatis a huge deal, and now they're giving shortstop Xander Bogaerts a huge deal. They'll move some pieces around in terms of positioning because they've gotten Bogaerts. They tried to go after Trey Turner. They could not get him, so they get another guy on the list. The Padres are becoming a serious player, but it goes back to what we were saying before. Until you know exactly how much money is coming in, and because they love to close those books and we don't really know, then don't be all worried about billionaire owners paying ball players what the market will give them. They're eye-opening numbers, don't get me wrong. And you know what's happening in Major League Baseball is that guys are getting deals that are pushing them past 40. We saw Aaron Judge get an 11-year deal. Now, this is an 11-year deal. Bogaerts is 30 years old. These teams are willing to go and pay the money way, way down the road and just to get them at their prime now, to get a guy at 31, 32 years old, they're willing to extend these contracts. That's the game that is now being played. It's not so much that Bogaerts gets 280. Somebody would give him 280. The Red Sox didn't want to do that. But it is the Padres, once again, that have got deep, deep pockets. They're proving to be one of the serious money teams in Major League Baseball with what they've did before. Again, with the Tatis Jr. deal, Soto picking him up, Manny Machado, and everything else that they've been bringing, including this Bogaerts deal. When you look at the teams that are in play for major free agent dollars, when you talk Yankees, when you talk Dodgers, used to talk Red Sox, but not so much now. San Diego is now on the list. Why not stay in Southern California when we come back? Thursday Night Football, the Rams taking on the Las Vegas Raiders. Let's talk Rams. All in last year. Was it worth it? We'll talk about that coming up next. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, we are going back to 1980 on the Throwback Thursday on this date, December 8th, 1980. Just before 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, John Lennon was shot outside of the Dakota in New York City by Mark David Chapman. Just immediate worldwide grief when the news broke. Many people heard it on Monday Night Football when Howard Cosell broke the news. I'm trying to think. I was young. I was really young, but I was trying to remember how I would have found out John Lennon died, and I don't remember it. Like, I don't remember.
Monday
but how
Night
would
Football.
I wasn't watching Monday Night Football
neither was
at 11:58 at night. Plus, it was after 11 when I finally got the news, because he was shot. He died around 11:15, so they got it late in the game. Remember, that game was Patriots, I think, and Miami, I think. I don't remember, but they were setting up a field goal, and it was late. And so it was towards the end of Monday Night Football. But I'm trying to think, as I was a kid, you know, I was probably 7, 8 years old, how would I have heard it? Like my parents would have probably heard it on the radio the next morning. They wouldn't stay up and watch Monday Night Football. And then I knew the Beatles, but,
news?
You know, yeah, I'm thinking like my parents probably heard it on the radio the next morning. And then I probably heard about it at school, maybe like as a kid. But anyway, Mark David Chapman fired bullets into John Lennon. And again, the legend died at 11:15. Here's how it went down on Monday Night Football back on this date in 1980.
Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous perhaps of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
Let's talk about Howard Cosell. There was nobody in that booth that could have done that, what Howard Cosell did. Howard Cosell was a very controversial broadcaster. He had a lot of haters. Like that was part of the charm of Howard Cosell on Monday Night Football, is that people hated Howard Cosell. There would be all sorts of like Howard Cosell, you know, little punching things you could do when he would come to town. But when the moment needed it, Howard Cosell was an authoritative presence in the booth. You know, I have never been able to do news well as a sports guy. I don't like doing news. I don't like it when I have to do news. It's like not my part of my thing. But Cosell could. He was a lawyer. He got into broadcasting late. To him, news, sports, it was all kind of in the same world. A lot of people in sports broadcasting talk about playing in the toy store. Howard Cosell never looked at sports as playing in the toy store. He always looked at it, it's sports or a fire or a murder. It's all kind of the same way to him. Like it was all part of that. So if you heard Frank Gifford before that, when he jumped in there, Frank Gifford is setting it up and he has to give it over to Howard Cosell because Cosell is the one that's delivering the news on the murder of John Lennon. Well, that took place, again, Throwback Thursday on this date. So we will play some John Lennon music, some Beatles music, and some other music from 1980 on our Throwback Thursday. All right, so tonight the Rams and the Raiders are playing. And look, I don't think either one, like I know the Rams at 3-9 are out. And I think that while you can flirt with all the 5-7 is not really out of it, I think they're out of it. I think that 5-7 with the way the AFC is structured, again, you could see teams fall apart. You never know. I get it. But I think 5-7 is a little too late in the game to be playing around with the playoffs. So I don't think tonight is anything for the Raiders like maybe people want to think it is. The Rams are done. They've lost 6 in a row. Matt Stafford is on the IR. Cooper Kupp's been on the IR. But it's raised an interesting question. And the question is starting to pop up now, which is, given everything that the Rams sacrificed to get their Super Bowl championship, and watching, for example, Jared Goff play really well. Jared Goff is doing very well in Detroit. Was it all worth it? Was it all worth it to get that Super Bowl and to lose Von Miller in free agency, or to watch Matt Stafford get to be an old quarterback and suffer a concussion / neck injury and just kind of fall down the spiral a bit? Was it all worth it? And the answer is, of course it was all worth it. Of course it is. Of course. As I was mentioning yesterday, the department of the football team that is guided on winning a championship, that got its job done. Now, the goal every year is to win a championship. We learned that from being very little sports fans. You know, teams are always, they're never satisfied with one. When they get one, they want two. Bill Belichick did this for 20 years, right? He would win a Super Bowl and then no days off, right? You know, that's just kind of the mentality. That side of the building got the job done. They looked at the assets that they had and they filled the assets with people that they knew could play at a particularly high level. And while it took some work, I mean, remember, the Rams' path to the Super Bowl was not easy. I mean, they had to go on the road and play Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. They had to win that game. And then they played the San Francisco 49ers in a very tough NFC title game in which they had to come back in the fourth quarter in order to do it. And then, of course, you're facing Joe Burrow and the Bengals, who are showing that they could beat the number one seed in the AFC in the Titans and beat the best quarterback in the game in Patrick Mahomes at his stadium. So that wasn't a real nice, easy path to win a championship, but they did. They did. And regardless of what Jared Goff is becoming in Detroit, and oh, by the way, how many of us thought that Jared Goff was just going to fill that place until somebody else arrived? He might be the guy. He might be the guy. He's playing pretty good football right now. They still might be looking for their franchise quarterback down the road, but it's not like Jared Goff is just playing out the string. I don't know what happened to him. He's playing really well. He's playing pretty well. That being said, it is it going to trickle down to a big plan where the blueprint for what the Rams was what they were doing is that, does that make all the GMs really wonder now where the future holds? Yeah, it's difficult to say. It's difficult to say because as we talked about again with Baker Mayfield yesterday, right? The scouting of quarterbacks just in that department alone is very, very difficult because unlike a lot of positions in the NFL where you can groom a guy into a future role, quarterbacks that are drafted in round number one are expected to be the immediate savior for the team. In fact, I think as a fan base, to be honest with you, I think we're getting kind of tired of the let's just find the journeyman veteran that can start until we get the guy ready. Because ready always just means when you're tired of the veteran's play or he's hurt and you got to throw the rookie in anyway. I think as a fan base, we're kind of, I never hear people say that they actually like that idea. But there is a risk of throwing a young quarterback out there, as we've seen time and time again. If you don't have the patience, you'll burn them out. Baker Mayfield had some success in Cleveland very early, and then with the shoulder injury, he didn't have the kind of success that the team was looking for long term. They went out and got Deshaun Watson. Right. And they went and said, look, we're willing to go with the controversy, all of the scrutiny, all of the people telling us that they no longer want to root for us anymore because we sold our morals to bring this guy here. But we're bringing this guy here. And they were willing to do it at the expense of admitting that the first pick overall in 2018 didn't work. Now, with the Rams, they had that similar situation with Jared Goff. They kind of went to a Super Bowl, but he wasn't really that great. And, you know, it was one of those situations where they could read the writing on the wall with Goff that if they were going to win a title, it wasn't going to be with him. And they went out and got Matt Stafford. And even though Goff is playing well, the plan worked. It worked exactly the way it was supposed to work. Now, if I'm a general manager in the NFL and I see the blueprint of instead of using the draft picks as getting young potential players and instead using those picks to package for veteran guys I already know, that's a plan, but you've got to be careful with that plan because the plan does not allow long-term success. You're going to need picks to fill in the gaps with young guys that you can get on rookie deals. As I mentioned about with the John Robinson being fired, one of the reasons that Amy Adams Strunk was not happy with the way that went down was because even though they didn't have to pay A.J. Brown the $100 million, the fact is somebody else could and somebody else did, and the Treylon Burks is going to emerge one day as an A.J. Brown and we'll get him for cheap. That plan was kind of rubbed in the face of the Titans when they went to Philadelphia and he had two touchdowns against them. So general managers were sort of playing a very, very iffy game on what exactly do you do in negotiations because not everybody's replaceable. The Rams winning a title is exactly what that blueprint was for. Was it meant to win five or six in a 10-year span? No, it wasn't. It wasn't. And it never really was. They knew they were risking the future to go after one shot or maybe two shots of glory. This year just didn't work out. They've had a number of injuries. I don't think this 3-9 six-game losing skid is because the plan has to eventually go sideways. I think it's because they got hurt. There were just a lot of injuries. And there was a retirement, there was the other things like that. But I think for the most part, injuries have really plagued the Rams this season, and that's why the season has kind of fallen by the wayside. But that being said, I still think you're going to see some teams do this. Now, look, if you need a defensive end and you see one in the draft, they're easy to, you get them, you grow them, they learn better techniques, they adapt to the pro game, and their development is not really under the spotlight. Right. I mean, you can draft an offensive lineman and it can be the same thing, right? You can draft a rookie tackle, you know, and you can just see you're not watching every weekend that player grow unless you're a diehard fan and you're watching every play and really analyzing it. But if I'm watching an offensive lineman, a rookie offensive lineman for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm not a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan. It's very hard for me to watch that growth. But I can watch a rookie quarterback progress anywhere in the country, even if I'm not watching, because that's the feature position. So when you draft quarterbacks, it seems like the success rate of people who really analyze this is not exactly, they're not exactly hitting home runs out of parks here. So the idea of getting a quarterback and growing them, like what we talked about with the Lions, like we'll find the quarterback in the draft. Maybe you found the guy right now. Because Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold are showing that this isn't an exact science and it's not a video game and these guys have to play. And when they can't play, you've wasted a high pick, a valuable pick on a player you're shipping out. And the Rams looked at it and said, you know what? We don't really want to do that and we don't have the patience to do that. So why don't we just go get our team today? So when you watch the game tonight and they talk about how this is a Super Bowl team that, you know, has the worst record of any Super Bowl champion and all of that, remember, there was a time where you would not have thought the Rams to be that. Because they had Jared Goff, and even though they went to the Super Bowl and should have won that Super Bowl, that low-scoring one against the Patriots in Atlanta, Super Bowl 53, the reality was they looked at the team and they didn't see a pathway to get there with that particular quarterback. So they went and got a guy that they felt that they could. The plan did work. In the end, it worked. What you're seeing in the aftermath is part of why it was worth it. Getting a Super Bowl title is hard to do. How you do it depends on the organization. But there is no right way or wrong way if in the end result is you have a Vince Lombardi trophy. I don't care if you did it through the draft. I don't care if you did it with free agent signings. I don't care if you gave up all your draft picks. I don't care what the plan was. If in the end you're hoisting the trophy, you've won the battle. You've won the idea. And the Rams won the idea. Think about that tonight when you see this game. And for all the criticism, or not really criticism, but sort of the side comments about how this season went by the wayside for the Rams this season. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. It is a throwback Thursday. We'll get back to the Major League Baseball conversation, as we talked about at the top of the hour, as Xander Bogaerts heads to San Diego. It feels like everybody's going to San Diego as we continue on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, 1980 Throwback Thursday on this date, John Lennon murdered outside the Dakota in New York City. This is Blondie, 1980. Wild! There is a viral video going around. I don't know how viral it is, but I know it's viral where I live, of a van going through a river. And I retweeted it yesterday. The van... The river is flooded, and the van pulls up to the road, and it decides whether or not it wants to go through it. And it decides, what the heck, we're going to go through it. And the river just starts pushing the van down the river, and the guy in the van yells he can't swim. Now, I think that he was eventually rescued, because it's from my town that happened yesterday. We had flooding yesterday. We had a massive, massive downpour that flooded everything. All the streets were flooded. My wife was like, all the streets were flooded. And this river overflowed. And this van pulled in. Have we not learned the lesson that you can't drive through a raging river?
You would think.
Like, it doesn't have, your car doesn't have a snorkel Dante's Peak. And somebody pointed out on Twitter that it's like a cubic foot of water weighs like 68 pounds. And when you have all this water, the water weighs more than your car.
Well,
or van,
I remember,
whatever.
Was it 6 inches of water can knock you down?
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredibly powerful.
You just have to remind everyone and tell little kids, like when we were at the beach, like, hey, remember 6 inches of water, that'll sweep you out.
Uh-huh. It's no joke. Mother Nature ain't playing around.
Well, I'm watching this video, Tony. He's got somewhere to go.
Yeah, you're right, isn't he? Just kind of.
Yep. Yep. There he goes. No, look
and
at
he
that.
Goes in, and then bye. I know you have to laugh, and people were like nervous. They're like, "Did he die?" And I'm like, "Well, if he died, we would have known. Like in our town, we would have found out. I think he got rescued. I think his van probably was down, got on the side, and he got out."
What's he thinking? I mean,
what is he thinking? Is right. It's insane.
I'm looking at this, and I mean, I don't know the road. But I could tell that it goes down right there.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, as soon as you get there and you can see that the water is coming up next to the grill, I'm saying, no, I'm out.
I love
whatever
living
job
in
I have to go to, sorry, I'm tapping out.
I love living in a town where people were like, that guy is Darwin Award. Yeah, I love living in a town where we have citizens that are now nominees for the Darwin Award for dumb things, driving through a raging flooded river. Robert on Twitter, recall the Lions get the Rams' number one pick next year. At the moment, that would be 3 or 4 overall. Bodes well to get a bona fide D-line player. Hope quarterback Goff sticks around in the Motor City. I hope so, too. I think his story is people are starting to pop up to the realization that he got a second chance with a fun team. He really did. I felt horrible for him. I remember that day when he got drafted, but he got sent to the Lions. I felt terrible for him. I was like, oh, boy, this guy was in the Super Bowl. He's leaving Sean McVay for what? Oh, the Lions are awful. That team is fun. He's fun. He's playing well. I think he's got like 8 touchdowns and 1 interception in the last 6 games. I mean, he's playing pretty good football. I mean, again, I don't know what the brain trusts in Detroit are thinking. Maybe they are still wondering if there's a young franchise quarterback in the draft. Right now, Jared Goff seems to be really good. So, and Alti Taylor is his throwback Thursday today. Well done, Robert. Well done. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with 2 N's. I have to admit, so late last night, I got up early to do some extra work, and I turned on, it was either ESPN or Fox, one of the stations. I can't remember, but they were buzzing about Xander Bogaerts going to the Padres. And my first thought was, the Padres are doing this again? No complaining about money. I don't care. Like, the Padres are in. Where are the Padres getting this money from?
I have no idea.
280, 11 years. 280,
I mean, that's on top
years.
Of what? It's 330 to Manny Machado.
Yeah, they got the Manny Machado deal.
And isn't another 3 to Fernando Tatis Jr.?
Tatis, and then they got
who can't come
Soto,
back to like around All-Star break.
Yeah, now Soto, did they sign him to the long-term deal yet, or are they still waiting to bang that out?
No, I think they're still waiting.
They're still waiting on that one.
Yeah, because our good friend Denton Day said that if Juan Soto joins the Phillies, he's not watching baseball ever again.
That's right. So Juan
the
Soto
Phillies
is
are becoming
still
the Nationals.
Still working out his potential deal. Woo! It was a lot of money.
Yeah, don't forget that, you know, they also have Blake Snell.
Blake Snell, that's right.
God, there was another pitcher, too. Mike Clevinger.
Mike Clevinger. Now, did Mike Clevinger land somewhere else?
Did he?
Did he go somewhere else?
I don't know.
It's so hard to keep up with all of these things. But I think he landed in Milwaukee. Or I don't know. I'll have to look it up. But nevertheless, there's a lot of money in San Diego now. They are willing to play this game. They really are. And you know what? I mean, I don't want to use iron sharpens iron because it's kind of a weird way to put it. But it's kind of like what we're seeing in the National League East, right? Like the Mets have got this owner and he's spending big. So the Braves and the Padres are like, the Phillies are like, we're going to do it too. Why not? I mean, why not go after Trey Turner? And the Braves are going to have to figure out if they can land and keep Dansby Swanson in free agency. But that's what you're getting. If the Dodgers are going after every single free agent that they can, if the Dodgers are putting up some big money and you want to compete against that team in the division, you've got to do the exact same thing. But it does go to show you what the players have been saying all along. There was such a backlash for many years on players who kept saying over and over again that the money's there, the money's there, the money's there. And there were a lot of people that you didn't know anything. They just didn't know the books. They were just looking at it with their perceptive eye and saying, I don't think you're right, right? Baseball's on the decline. Look at these ticket sales. And the players kept going, no, there's more than you think. There's a lot of local dollars that these teams are generating. And it appears so. This is a big, big contract for a 30-year-old shortstop. Now, Xander Bogaerts is a 4-time All-Star. He's part of a 2-time World Championship team, right? But it's 11 years. It's 11 years. It's like the Yankees. Look, the Yankees, do you think the Yankees really wanted to give Aaron Judge, you know, 360 for 9 to put him at 39 years old, almost 40 years old, and they're still paying him $40 million a year? Of course not. But that's what when you go up against all these other teams that are like, you know what, we'll do it, then you got to do it too. And that's what these players want. The players want to be in a position where they're 37, and instead of wondering where their next paycheck's going to be or who they're going to land, what team they're going to land on, they're like, nah, I'm making $38 million a year. Now, what does $38 million a year look like 10 years from now? Who cares? They got it.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, Throwback Thursday. On this date in 1980, John Lennon was shot in New York City. I keep wondering about that. What was that like for somebody that grew up in the 50s and then went into the 60s and the Beatles start to emerge? So you're getting like Elvis and then the Beatles come and sort of change music and you're part of that, like you're growing into that and the Beatles become very important in your young life. And then you're kind of an adult in 1980 and John Lennon is shot outside of his apartment in New York City. The emotions,
especially him too.
Yeah, like the just
I mean, the one who's just always about peace. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I mean, yeah, he, you know, controversial, obviously, and you know, everyone pointed the finger at him for the reason the Beatles broke up.
Sure, sure.
But
Mark David Chapman was angry about the Jesus comment that he made, like in the '60s, that they were more popular than Jesus, and he was kind of upset about that. But he was also, you know, nuts. So I mean, but how traumatizing that must have been to just be. Feeling every, like, just loving the Beatles, growing up with the Beatles, maybe even going crazy with the Beatles. You were a young kid. And then in 1980, John Lennon is shot and dies. It's got to be, yeah, I don't know what else to, it's like when artists die in plane crashes or things like that, it's like sad, but just murdered outside their house? Like a John Lennon? That must have been incredibly, you know, just filled with grief and emotion.
But see, but I love what you brought up earlier. Is like, how would people, like today, if that happens, we'll know instantly.
Right, we know instantly.
I mean, we found out about Xander Bogaerts getting a deal right. In the middle of the night.
Middle of the night.
Yeah. That would be something that we'd maybe wake up to in 1980.
Such a wild way to consume news. It really is.
It like, really is.
So, like to get stuff instantly and then to not believe it immediately.
Well, that's why when the idea was flirting that Twitter was going to go away. Remember that? It was like right over Thanksgiving break. The one thing that went through my mind was like, God, that's how breaking news happens all the time. What am I going to do now?
What would we do? Would something else just immediately pop up and replace it? Then you got to sign up for that.
Yep.
You got to go back and follow the right people. But when we talked on Tuesday before, by the way, you're feeling better now?
I am feeling better. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad.
It was one of those things that felt like it charged at me. It was like a charging bull.
Yeah.
Just came in really quick, just wrecked me, and then left.
So back when Christy Alley died, right, I found out through a friend's post on Facebook, and he didn't link it to an article. He just wrote, rest in peace, Christy Alley, with a sad emoji. And I was like, oh, what's that? That's not. And then I had to look it up and double check it. And there it was, I found out she had passed away. So in 1980, and again, I was very, very little. So I'm assuming that what happened for most people, this is what happened. John Lennon goes to his apartment. He's shot. He's rushed to the hospital, right? Doctors work on him. He dies. Then it goes to the news. And then the news confirms that and then releases that to the public, right? So when Howard Cosell is on Monday Night Football and he's reading that John Lennon was shot dead on arrival, that's official. Like he said, ABC News is reporting. It's official. There was nobody going, oh, I better double check that. False news, fake news. No, it came from a reliable source. It came from a source you trusted. Howard Cosell on ABC delivering the news that John Lennon was dead. Now it's like you sort of go, I don't know, what's that? Yeah, let me see. I don't know. I'll have to double check. Like I see somebody die. When I see somebody post somebody, a famous person dying on Twitter or Facebook, I Google that person immediately. And I hate to admit this, Ron. I really hate to admit this. But do you know where I feel like when I know the news is correct? When I see it on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing because we all scoff at Wikipedia. We all go, eh. But if I Google a celebrity and I see died on that on this date, on whatever date it is, then I go, well, I guess it's true. Like, I guess it's true. Even though people could just jump in there and do it all the time. It's a weird relationship we have with news now. We don't immediately trust it, and then we find our own ways to trust it. But back in 1980, you didn't have to doubt when Howard Cosell told you John Lennon was shot and dead. That may have sounded unbelievable that could happen to the most popular Beatle. But it did, and you know it did because he told you it did, and you believed that You believed it. It came from a reliable source. So that's our throwback Thursday today. So I wanted to touch on again what I just mentioned before about baseball. I think that this is such a boom for these ball players that it's something, again, they have fought for. They fought for a long, long time. And when we all can roll our eyes at millionaires versus billionaires, and that's what we do that all the time with these labor negotiations. It drives me crazy. It drove me crazy not that long ago when we had COVID and they couldn't come together during the COVID collective bargaining thing. It drove me crazy when they canceled the World Series in the 90s. It drove me crazy at any time. There's always labor problems with any sport when we get to millionaires versus billionaires. When it happened with the NBA, which one was it that said we make a lot of money, but we spend a lot of money too? Was that Latrell Sprewell? I can't remember who said that, but it's a absolutely poignant statement for when we talk about millionaires and billionaires fighting. But what the players were always, always, always saying was that in a sport that is as secretive with its money, we know there's money. And when you want to talk about a salary cap, we're not gonna want it because of the principle of getting what we're worth. But it also allows for situations like what you're seeing now. Again, it goes back to a player in his 29 years old, 30 years old, whatever that is, now getting deals into their 40s. Now, again, the way Major League Baseball is working, it is working for the 40-year-old player when before it didn't. So if you were a National League team back in the day, you were probably a little suspect on signing a guy into his 40s because you didn't have the designated hitter. So you were probably like, do I want a 39-year-old guy out there playing in the outfield? Like, as good of an athlete as he is today, 10 years from now, am I going to want to pay him $40 million to go roam the outfield? But now the designated hitter, with everybody getting it, allows now for teams to go, can he still swing a bat? Because if he can still swing a bat, I could use him. And I will probably use him. As long as they keep up that skill at 37, 38, 39, I don't mind these long-term deals. But it even goes further than that. It's not so much that they're anticipating any sort of production at 38, 39. What they're doing is they're paying you for the time you are 30, 31, 32, 33. So when you see Aaron Judge making $40 million a year, don't look at it as making $40 million a year over 9 years. Look at it as him making $80 million in the first couple of years of the deal, and then them just sort of paying it out. If you want to look at it sort of in this like higher level, theoretically, their value for Aaron Judge is in the first 5 years of this contract. The next 4 years of the deal, maybe even three, if you really want to push it, probably three. The three is the price you pay to get him for the first six. So that's the way a lot of people are looking at this. Nobody thinks, for example, that Xander Bogaerts is going to bat 300 with 25 home runs when he's 40 years old. It's going to be 41, by the way, for Bogaerts when this deal is over. Now, they're not paying him the 280 over 11. They're paying him a good portion of that in the first couple of years. They're trying to get the value of the good couple of years. And what they're trying to do, you found out it was Yu Darvish we were thinking of, the pitcher that they signed?
Yeah, that's what I meant, not Clemenger.
Yeah, so Yu Darvish. So you've got Snell, Darvish, you got Machado that you're trying. Now, Machado can opt out of his deal in 2023, but they're going to try to keep him. The Juan Soto trade that they made at the deadline, now they're going to try to sign him long term. But now they've got Bogaerts. This is a team that is trying to do, like, take this opportunity with young players and build a winning team. Fernando Tatis, build a winning team, win a couple of World Series. Whatever happens after that, as these guys get older, years down the road, it's all worth it if they can get some titles. And to be honest with you, it'll be worth it even if they don't get titles if you're talking about the other side of the building. Because remember what I was saying yesterday? Go to any team. So because you missed the show, I'll tell you. You go to a sports building, right? The headquarters of a sports team. There are two sides to the sports team. There's the side that is doing everything it can to pursue a championship, right? But then there's the other side that's running the business, and the business doesn't have to win a championship. The other side of the building is marketing, it's sales, it's everything that is involved in the day-to-day revenue of the, it's media rights, it's all of those things. Whether you win a title or not, that side of the building operates on a revenue-generating stream like any other business, right? Like, you could have a fast food business, but you don't have to be number one to make money. And that side of the building knows that you don't have to win a championship to make money. But the coaches and the scouts and the GM and the vice president and the player personnel and all of that, their goal is to win a championship. That side of the building tries to win a championship. The other side of the building sells what they have. So the Padres are going to have something sellable. Young stars, guys that are going to excite you. Buy season tickets, buy corporate tickets, buy the suites, buy everything that we're pitching, buy sponsorships, buy whatever, up the media rights, whatever it is. That's what they're utilizing with these players. Does for that side of the building, does that turn into a championship? Well, if it does, we make more money. But you know what? Even if it doesn't, we're going to make some money off of this. Now, for the manager and the general manager, they better win a championship, because that's a lot of money on the line for that side of the building. So even if the Padres don't win a title, there's one half of the off, well, not half, but one side that's fine. But the other half better be be a little nervous if it doesn't turn into a championship. But I can guarantee you this, because we've seen it with the Dodgers already. If they don't win a championship, well, if they didn't do these moves, they're not going to win a championship. Right? Look, like, how many games did the Dodgers win this past year, even though they didn't go to the World Series? Well, they just crushed everybody. Was it 106?
I think it was 106.
106, 107? That's an incredible benchmark.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Doesn't mean anything, Tony.
Yeah, I know. I got you. But if you are the Padres and you're like, woe is us, we can't compete, you're never going to, why bother? Why bother rolling in a division that is as loaded as the Dodgers? No, play your cards the way it's supposed to be played. Go out there and get some talent. And they're as attractive a young team as you have in Major League Baseball. And it's coming in San Diego, of all places. Like, I remember, like, San Diego was like a place you'd go because the weather was nice.
I remember you
got the best deal.
So I lived in San Diego for 12 years, and it was a place, they had a really good team. And then they pretty much traded half their team to Boston.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or not even traded, just got rid of them. Like, I mean, that was, you know, Adrian Gonzalez, who came up through the system, everyone thought for sure the Padres are going to find a way to keep him. He's homegrown guy. He's from the area, blah, 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 blah. And even they wouldn't hold on to him. They're like, no, we got to ship you out now. You're too much for us. And they did that constantly. The only one who always saved it was Tony Gwynn.
Yeah, sure.
And that's because Tony Gwynn made his agent mad all the time because he kept taking team-friendly deals.
Of course. San Diego, you know,
or,
State guy.
Or even,
right?
Giving him a discount, saying, no, let me go less so they can sign this guy and that guy.
Because Tony Gwynn was looked around and went, why would I want to leave San Diego?
Yeah.
This is beautiful. This is great.
And we all know Tony Gwynn. Weather. I mean, Tony Gwynn today, he'd be that guy who'd get out. He could get like a $300 million deal.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, Tony Gwynn, I know he went to college there and it's all low. But Tony Gwynn seemed like the kind of player that realized, you know what, as a player, there's a lot of value in staying with one team for your career. Like, to be the guy that chases this and chases that and chases this. Yep, you can do that. But man, when you can endear yourself to a community, when you can have people, and it's too bad he's not getting this today. That's just sad. That he's not getting the sort of accolades of people bringing their sons to him and saying, oh, son, this is the best hitter in baseball. This is the best hitter who ever played. Like, for him not to be able to receive that, it's very tragic. But he saw the value of that.
Like, it's surprising. Like, I was literally shocked when Aaron Judge re-signed with the Yankees.
I was too.
Because,
I thought
just
he was
giant
bound.
Reason. Yeah. I thought for sure. It's like, oh, no, he's done with New York. He did all he could. Set a record. He's out.
Yep. And I was saying this yesterday. I think for the Yankees, if Aaron Judge had hit 62 home runs, let's say with the Orioles or the Red Sox, and he was a free agent, the Yankees would pursue him, obviously, but it wouldn't have been important to land him. I think they could not lose the war of Aaron Judge. That organization could not lose the war to Aaron Judge, because the value that he has within the history of that organization, if they let him go to the Giants, that Brian Cashman, and that they would never forgive that team for that mistake. You could sell it all you want, but there was no excuse for the Yankees to lose that battle, to not retain a guy that is in the history books like he is. When you're talking Ruth, Maris, Judge, and Judge goes to the Giants, like, that would have been insane. Absolutely insane. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, throwback Thursday. This day, 1980, John Lennon murdered outside of his apartment in New York City. And you can still see people gather in Central Park on this date. They'll do it today on the anniversary of John Lennon's death. Still enough people still affected by that 42 years ago on Throwback Thursday. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. So tonight, the Raiders and the Rams. Oh, man, I'm not a Raider fan by any means, and I know you aren't. Definitely you aren't. But, man, this team is going to, if they win tonight and they keep winning games, man, they're going to look back on a lost opportunity. They're clicking a bit. I'm not saying they're on a roll. They won two games in overtime, and one was to Denver. But that win against Seattle was a big deal. Last week was a big deal. So they got something going. But again, tonight they could win four in a row. And Josh Jacobs is leading the league in rushing.